The information included in this podcast is for informational purposes only. Nothing discussed here is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, and never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you heard on this podcast. Hello everyone, this is Victoria Porter. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. You're listening to the Healthy Hot Springs podcast from the Razorback Campersale Studios. Health is our most important asset, and on this show, I sit down with local health professionals to discuss opportunities and strategies for you to get healthy hot springs. Today on the podcast, Dr. Kathy Staton is back in the studio, psychologist here in private practice here in downtown Hot Springs. I hope that our listeners have listened to the first part of my conversation with Kathy. We really kind of dove into trauma and brain change and treat in kind of some therapies for those brain spotting and EMDR. So welcome back, Kathy.
Thank you for having me here today.
Absolutely. Such fascinating topic that we have. So this is why there's two. There's just so much to cover here. So we're not going to, listen to the first one. It is important. We're just kind of continuing this conversation. So I know, so we're going to start this podcast with continuing this idea of trauma, right? Mm-hmm. And kind of some brain rewiring basics, right?
Yeah. So, okay. And this is something that I teach all of my clients, whether they're there for trauma or something different. I teach them about what I call a resiliency bucket, that each of us is born with some ability to handle what life throws at us, okay? And I was trying to get an actual picture of what this might look like in real life, and all that could come to mind for me was when I was a kid and we were making ice cream. And originally we had the little hand crank ice cream bucket, but then somehow we got this newfangled, fancy, big motored ice cream machine. And it was a bucket. It was a wooden bucket. And to make that ice cream, you know, we would have to fill the canister with milk and with that delicious Eagle brand stuff, yes, and sugar, yeah, and eggs and all the ingredients and put it in the bucket. And then around the freezer, we would have to pack in ice and salt. And then we would turn on the bucket, the motor, and it would start processing the stuff in the bucket. And so, as I was thinking about our resiliency buckets, what we're born with, think of it as our body, our brain's way of being able to deal and process with what's put in the bucket. It's supposed to churn it up. It's supposed to process it. And some of us were born with nice big buckets, and others of us were born just genetically with smaller buckets. But all of us have some resiliency. But then as we grow up and our environments and the other people around us and what we learn and all these things, it either informs our bucket and helps our bucket to be processing that stuff, or it doesn't. Our bucket might actually even shrink if it doesn't get good examples or if it gets bad examples. Meanwhile, there's all of what life is throwing at us being put in that bucket. Some people's buckets are filled really full, even in preschool. There's a lot of stuff being put in that bucket. Others, it's later in life. There's stuff being put in that bucket.
Sometimes good and bad.
Both good and bad, right. And it's sometimes there's, if there is a trauma, it could be putting stuff in there really fast and the bucket is unable to keep up. Or sometimes there's a big T trauma, like we talked about in our last time together, that something really big and massive is put in that bucket. And whether there's a lot of little things being put in that bucket, or whether it's one big thing, or sometimes both, a lot of little things being put in the bucket plus one huge big thing, and the bucket can't keep up. And I was reminded of that time, sometimes like when our ice cream machine would be processing along, and all of a sudden it would get stuck, and it wouldn't be working. And if it were just kept on like that, it would burn out, or it would overflow.
You have to go and bang on the side.
That's right, right, right. Or even sometimes we would have to literally stop it, go in and put, you know, remix the stuff, you know, so it's less packed or whatever, and then hope that it would keep up and be able to turn it. And that's what we're learning with resiliency skills, is we're helping our bucket to churn all that stuff, to be able to keep up with what life is throwing at us. Usually when, by the time someone comes into my office, usually that bucket has not been keeping up for a while. And stuck. Something's been put in it. Something's happened to where it's now overflowing, or it's tipped over. That's usually where I see people come into my office, and they're like, and they can point to that one thing that tipped over the bucket. You know, they can point to that. But then I see, oh, you still have a whole bucket of stuff.
All that stuff going in there.
Right. Before that last thing that tipped your bucket over, you've had all of this other stuff that's not been processing. And we've got to get your system, your bucket, moving and turning again. And so that's where I teach them these resiliency skills, which starts helping with the brain change to process that stuff, even if we never get to trauma therapy itself.
Because there are just, you know, some basic therapeutic tools that we use, cognitive behavior therapy. Certainly, I think it's probably, would you agree, it's the most evidence-based?
It certainly was when I was in school, you know, about a decade ago. It was certainly the one where if we were going to be doing a research project or if it was considered a valid research project, if you use some CBT as your therapy mode, then yes, it was considered, you know, gold standard. CBT is considered gold standard because it's been around for a long time. And it's been well-researched, and now we've got what we call meta-analysis on a lot of the CBT stuff, which is where they take thousands of CBT studies and put it into one study, and we can really see how it's been effective or not effective, or compared it to medicines or whatever it may be.
So let's talk of just the basics of CBT.
Okay, so cognitive behavioral therapy, there's a premise that imagine a triangle, and on one corner of the triangle is behaviors or actions, and another corner of the triangle is your emotions or feelings, and then the third corner is your mind or your thoughts. Okay, so you've got thoughts, you've got behaviors, you've got emotions as the three corners. And the idea is by changing one of them, you can impact the other two because they're all connected. So we could try to change behaviors and see if that helps with emotion regulation and what's going on with your thoughts. And this is very helpful for, we see this kind of work with kids with autism and with behavioral problems. They usually start on the behavioral or the action piece of it.
And actually true, same with depression in adults, right?
Right. Behavioral activation is what that's called.
Yeah, sometimes you have to, even though you don't want to do it, you don't feel like doing it, if you actually do it, you will feel better.
Right. And then there's the therapies that work on the emotion and the emotion regulation in hopes that that will help with your thoughts and your behaviors. In other words, I'm depressed. What can I do to boost my mood? I'm going to, you know, think about this happy time in my life, and I'm going to get some sunshine mm-hmm. and listen to some music, and that's going to boost my mood,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
There are things that you can do to boost mood or regulate mood. And then there's the things that the therapies that regulate thoughts and help you deal with your thought processes. And this is where there's cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT. But then there was a whole line which was just cognitive therapies, which were just around mm-hmm. your thoughts. And it was under that premise of, well, changing your thoughts will change everything. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So. And I think a perfect example of this is mm-hmm. So last session we were talking about trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And I used the example of a lady who, because of a traumatic experience, she was in a normal setting. She walked into a doctor's office with her children. And because of the trauma in her past, she's, you know, hypervigilant about anything bad happening. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she's like, I scoped out where the exits were. How can I get my kids out of here if, you know, mm-hmm. something bad mm-hmm. happens? So
yeah,
I think that is a perfect example of, so for her, she has an automatic negative thought mm-hmm. that this is a dangerous place,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And she can learn to, you know, kind of reality check that mentally and mm-hmm. say, okay, is this really a dangerous place? It's the doctor's office. We've been here many times,
right?
It's really not dangerous.
Yeah.
And that is a cognitive therapy approach. Mm-hmm. However, that does not address the trauma as to why she mm-hmm. would think that mm-hmm. that is a dangerous negative place, right?
Right,
and that's
right.
the difference
right.
in, you know, this kind of brain rewiring versus CBT.
Right, right. So, you know, we talked about the upper brain versus midbrain, where, yeah, the trauma therapies of EMDR and brain spotting were more midbrain.
Right.
And something like a CBT traditionally has been more upper brain.
Right.
Yeah, let's figure out that thought. Let's notice that thought. And let's work on that thought and rationalize.
And that's helpful.
Yes,
right?
Yes, yeah. Definitely has its place.
Yes.
Definitely.
And for someone who hasn't had a major trauma, that may be all that is mm-hmm, needed mm-hmm. to learn to identify that
yes.
automatic negative thought and be like, okay, you know, mm-hmm. it's really not a dangerous place, and I need to learn to deal with this anxiety, right? And you learn some coping skills to deal with
right.
the
so,
effects of that.
So one of the techniques that I use for the automatic negative thoughts, we call them ANTS, that stands for ANTS,
yeah.
And I use Dr. Daniel Amen's ant eater technique. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but Dr. Amen is a psychiatrist who's mostly world known for his brain scans. Has done hundreds of thousands of brain scans and can look at a brain and say, oh, they've got some depression and some stuck thoughts. And
so it shows on a brain scan
that
depression is
right.
In.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, he has what's called the ant eater technique, in which you can give a species to your thoughts, so such as that's dangerous. That would be a species that we call focus on the negative, or even future telling, fortune telling kind. And then he asks four questions of that ant, of that thought. And the first is that true? And the second question is, can I absolutely, 100%, without a doubt, know whether that's true? The third question is, how does that ant, that thought, make me feel? How is it impacting my behaviors? And usually if the answer there is, it's, you know, paralyzing me, it's keeping me hypervigilant, it's, you know, definitely an ant, go to the fourth question. And this is the most important question. And that is, what would I be thinking? What would I be feeling? What would I be doing? What would be different? Who would I be without that thought? And that starts putting into play that positive alternative. Now, sometimes that's hard to, it's hard for someone to mm-hmm. imagine. Well, I don't even know what I'd be thinking without that negative thought. And so there's a fifth follow-up question that's sometimes helpful for that. And that is, what is an opposite of that ant? And there can even be multiple opposites, and sometimes that's where we start, of starting to explore what's the alternative. to this aunt.
How many steps do you take if you have a rock in your shoe? Not many. Well, if you have to walk on a prosthetic leg that does not fit, it is like walking with a rock in your shoe. Although there are many innovations when it comes to prosthetic feet and knees, the comfort of a prosthesis begins with the fit of the socket. Michael Kenny is a certified prosthetist who has been walking on a prosthetic leg since he was 16 years old, after losing his leg to a motorcycle accident. He is committed to fitting prosthetic legs so they are comfortable, intimate, and optimize ease of walking. Motility Prosthetics has been in Hot Springs since 2015, but Michael Kenny has been building legs for over 25 years. All fabrication is done on site. There are no delays from having to ship to a fabrication house. Adjustments can easily be made on the spot. Motility means the spontaneous ability to move. At Motility Prosthetics, we want you to be able to walk on your prosthetic leg with a sense of spontaneity. Call for a free consultation, 501-620-4800.
Gosh, there's a really good children's book, and I have it in my office, and I'm trying to think of the name of it, but it is the anteater on the cover. I can It's anteater on the cover, and he's talking, you know, it's a book about the ants. I'm sorry that I can't tell you, but it's a really great children's book, and it really breaks that down, and I've actually used it for adults.
Yes.
Because it's the simplicity of it makes it really useful. But yes, so there's a lot of resources and information out there for CBT top therapies.
Right. And ants is, it's one I use with adults. But yeah, it can be taught for as young as age 8.
Yeah.
And so it and what I use it for is, again, it's starting to build resiliency within the client. It's starting to get that bucket churning, because something that could be hanging up their bucket is that thought that just keeps going through their head and keeps going through their head, and they're just floating along with that thought as if it's true, as if that's the only alternative without even noticing. So let's address that thought. Let's start moving that through.
I call it becoming the therapist in your brain, right? I mean, I think if you kind of start to, for people who've been in therapy, right, you just kind of like, you want to hear your therapist's voice in your mind saying, really, is that true? You know, let's really look at this and see what's really going on here. So CBT, does it rewire the brain?
So there are some forms of CBT, which I would say yes,
okay,
they rewire. You know, something like ants, it's working on upper brain, you know, getting your resiliency bucket moving. But then there are some techniques with CBT which are into the rewiring of the brain. And let's talk a little bit about what that is. So there's a therapist, her name is Lisa Wimberger, and she's written a children's book also that kind of demonstrates what brain wiring is and how it gets us hung up and how we need to rewire. And in her book, it talks about your brain as if it's a library. Okay? And then she even goes into three midbrain structures, because what happens is when our bucket, our resiliency bucket, is not moving and it's shut down, what happens is there's an area of our brain that goes offline, and that's in our midbrain. It's our limbic system. And there's some structures in our limbic system, in our midbrain, that kind of go offline when our resiliency bucket is not working. And so think of the example for a minute of, I've had like a client, they come in and they're like, I've, you know, been through a bad breakup or been through a divorce, and now every time I hear this song on the radio, I get sad and I get mad, and it makes me want to go and call the person, and I want to go and scream, and I don't want to do my dishes, and I want to throw stuff. Okay, and so that we can see some brain wiring has happened, because we say in brain wiring, what fires together, wires together. All right. And so what that is your brain has neurons in it. And each neuron has what we call dendrites, these little finger-looking things. And the more we use that neuron, the more those little dendrites fire mm-hmm. and wire and communicate to other neurons. So if there was a song that fired the neuron, then that neuron's little dendrites began to grow. And well, it also with that song then came sadness and upsetness. Well, so now those sad neurons are also firing. And so now sad is wired to that song as well as anger, as well as, and so whatever fired together, wired together in the brain. And think of it as a superhighway that's been built in your brain around that song.
Right.
Right. So, what Lisa Wurmberger talks about is, so imagine you're going into your brain and you're like, yeah, you know, I've got this song and I'm not sure what to do about it. Well, on your way into the library, because you meet up with emotional Amy, and this is the amygdala, the emotion center of our brain.
Yeah.
And emotional Amy's like, oh yeah, yeah, the librarian's waiting for you. Oh, it's good to see you again. And you go into the librarian's your hippo. It's your hippocampus. It's a memory center. And she's got everything filed and books with, you know, all of your experiences. And librarian hippo says, oh yes, yes, yes. I've got this book all ready for you. You use it a lot. And so I don't even file it anymore. I just keep it right here. Ready for you. This is how you need to respond to the song. And she's handing you the same script that you've had before, because that's
how
what she knows.
Wired,
that's
right.
How it's wired.
Right.
And in fact, this book's getting bigger and bigger. Every time you hear that song, it just fires more and the book gets another chapter. And so she, you know, so you get the book and you know, she didn't even look for other books. Okay. She did. I mean, there's not even any, you know, this is the one. This is what you're used to, you know, good or bad. Here it is. This is the script for how to handle this song. And as you're on your way out of the library, you run into emotional Amy again. It's like, oh, I'm so glad you got that book again. Mm-hmm. Here, put on these chains and put on this really, really, really heavy necklace and these lead shoes and this, you know, and put this on. And now you can feel exactly like you're supposed to feel for this script. Okay. And so emotional Amy will set that up, that these are the emotions that are tied to that script and to that memory. And so now you're going to feel exactly like you did with that song before. And then that sets up another area of your brain, which is called the hypothalamus, which then kicks in the behaviors that are connected. Here's
you
how
you call.
Here
you
is how
call,
you're
I
supposed
guess.
To behave
yes.
with this song.
Yes.
And so you're all working around that same script and that same script and that same script and that same script. When there's other scripts, they're not nearly as thick, but the librarian would have to go search for them. The librarian might even have to go and learn it and find out where it's filed. Might have even forgotten that's filed there because it's not been fired and wired as much as this other one has been.
So how do you change that script?
So there are many ways. There are physical ways. So, you know, we're dealing with actions, behaviors, we're dealing with thoughts, and we're dealing with emotions. And so, again, from a CBT model, you can start to change that script from one of those pieces.
So let's take the song, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
you could listen to the song
mm-hmm.
and...
So... Let's talk about some physical ways to interrupt that script or start getting the brain to stop firing and wiring as it always has been and maybe start down another path. One of the things that we do naturally when our resiliency bucket is working the way it should is we shake or we tremor or we, you know, we have movement to help our system process the emotions and the distress and the things that are going on. But unfortunately, in our world, our culture, that's not usually acceptable, mm-hmm. right? We don't want to be shaking. We don't want to be, you know, look like we're weak in front of others,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
And so, but maybe allow yourself to actually shake out your muscles a little bit. And think of the person that's just been through a good workout and they're loosening up their muscles, mm-hmm. you know, maybe doing some stretching and you see them shake. Maybe do something physically like that for 10 seconds to a minute. Purposefully do it. Do it in the privacy of your bedroom, in the bathroom. Physically shake it off. Physically shake it off. Literally shake it off. There's something, and sometimes usually if you allow your system to shake like that, it'll naturally do some of it on its own.
So am I doing this while I'm listening to the song or just mm-hmm. kind of yeah. thinking about that
so,
situation and that boy, right?
So you can do brain rewiring literally any time. Like, oh, I'm bored. Let me do some brain rewiring.
Yeah.
Definitely. But it will be the most impactful mm-hmm. if it is in the moment.
Because then you can rechange
yes.
the wiring.
Right, right. Because yeah. that's when it's firing. And so yeah. what is it wiring to? So, yeah, if you can interrupt it during the moment, all the better. But I know that's sometimes hard. So sometimes yeah. we have to just purposefully do it at other times.
Yeah, if you're sitting in the restaurant and the song comes on,
Yeah. You might not want to sit out there yeah. and yeah. shake. So another natural body way with our bodies to interrupt that firing and wiring is through our breathing or our breath. Mm. Again, it's a very natural mm-hmm. thing that's going on. And one of the natural processes with our breathing is that when we breathe in, our heart rate goes up. And when we breathe out, our heart rate naturally goes down. And so if we're being fired, if something's happening, the songs, and we notice our heart rate going up mm-hmm. and we're getting elevated, mm-hmm. we can breathe out slowly to actually slow our heart rate. And so just kind of breathe in normal, but then breathe out slowly.
I know I teach square breathing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Box breathing.
Mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
is a common technique for breathing where you mm-hmm. actually, you know, you breathe in and then you hold.
Right.
And then you breathe out. And it's so hard, the holding. Mm-hmm, I think we think, mm-hmm. oh, it's so natural, but it's not.
Mm-hmm, right.
And it does it. I think it forces you to kind of concentrate.
Right, right.
Be present.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And definitely starts to slow that physiological
right,
system down.
Right,
yeah.
Where if you're depressed and if the song's making you depressed and less energy, we know that breathing in is going to increase our heart rate. So breathe in more deeply or do double breath even. You know, breathe.
Yeah.
Breathe in. Spend more time breathing in.
Yeah. Breathing is such a simple mm-hmm. yet mm-hmm. overlooked. Like even in the military, mm-hmm. you know, they're taught breathing. Lamaze.
Yeah, yeah.
For childbirth mm-hmm. is about breathing, right?
And so there's something about the breathing that if there is a bigger gap in the rate of your heartbeat with the breathing in and the breathing out, the wider that gap of that heart rhythm, the more resilient your system is.
Yeah.
That resiliency bucket is healthier with if it beats more higher as you breathe in and if it beats lower. Where if it's pretty similar, both of them, that means your resiliency bucket's probably struggling.
Yeah. And I feel like these are some techniques people can, you know, really mm-hmm. use at
yeah.
home.
Right. In the job, when their yeah. boss is making them mad or, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Kathy, unfortunately, we are yet again out of time. And I know there's so much more, you know, we just barely touched on this. It is so fascinating. So much to, you know, this trauma, brain rewiring, CBT, brain spotting, EMDR. Thank you so much for covering all of these topics. So again, just to wrap up, tell our listeners, I know you have private practice here in Hot Springs, right?
Right, yeah. So I have a private practice in the Lindell Square above Colorado Grill.
Most people know where that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't typically advertise because for the privacy of my clients, I don't have signs, and I don't even have much web presence. Yeah. I've got a Psychology Today site and a little bit of Facebook, but my number is 501-617-5678.
And I know last time you said you only have a waiting list. You really aren't accepting new clients at this time.
Right.
But definitely you can get on that waiting list and do accept insurance as well. So thank you so much, Dr. Kathy Staton.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
I've enjoyed
conversation.
It.
Thanks for listening to Healthy Hot Springs from the Razorback Camper Sales Studios. Join us every Wednesday as we discuss a different topic related to keeping hot springs healthy.